another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream and you can holler.
Hi, folks, this is Jack Spirko with yet another edition of the Survival Podcast. As always, one man's view of the changing world and the changing economic times, and the things that we can all do to live a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. Once again, folks, you got me in a morning commute. The show, as always, is being dictated during my 50-mile drive. This time again from my home up to Frisco, Texas, in the morning from my personal mobile studio, which is my 2006.5 Jetta diesel. And if you can find one, as of last year they made these cars, you do not need hybrid technology or $50,000 to have a car that does 40-plus miles to the gallon. This car gets about 44, even the way that I drive it, which is not quite sane, especially during some of my more angrier podcasts. You know, it's been known to bend a speed limit or two. And German engineering, I sure wish Americans would start building cars like this. It would make a hell of a lot of sense, and maybe they wouldn't have to be bailed out like everybody else seems to be bailed out. Because even though today's show is actually, I'm going to take a swing here and go somewhere else. I've been getting pretty mad lately, and even had one or two of you go, do you have to be so rough with your language and use GD and, you know, whatever. And folks, read my disclaimers page, man. This is an adult show. There won't be too much of that in today's show, though, because I'm going to go in and talk about just different options there are for people to acquire firearms without breaking the bank, so to speak. What affordable options out there, great deals are out there, some stuff that's in the surplus military market right now. So we're going to talk about that. But before I do, I want to talk about just a couple things. Number one, somebody posted on the forum, and I haven't responded to this yet, but somebody posted on the forum yesterday that while we've all been misdirected with this $700 billion bailout, that the government stepped in and threw a little bit of money at the three big automakers in the U.S., Ford, GM, and Chrysler. They got a little check split up between them for about $50 billion. We say that again, $50 billion. And then, from what this guy posted, I haven't researched this yet, so this is unconfirmed at the time. But, you know, hold on, folks, while I give this guy the bird. You see this? You jerk. I don't even think I'm going to edit that out. This guy's an ass. Anyway, while we were misdirected, they dropped that $50 billion check on the big three automakers, and they committed to giving them another $50 billion next year, which I don't understand. I think you would give them the $50 billion and say, hey, we gave you, like, what is $50 billion divided by three? It's more billions than I've ever had. It's like $16, $17 billion in that range. Almost 18? No, it'd be like 15, 16 billion each. Hey, you know what? That's a lot of money. Why don't you go fix your company with it and don't ask for more? But no, we'll give you another matching amount next year. So that happened while we were paying attention to the Congress. You probably haven't heard it anywhere, and kudos to the person that posted it and didn't write down their handle or anything, but I'll mention them by name on my last show of the week tomorrow, just because I think they deserve it for finding that little tidbit. So that's one thing I went on. Another thing is I had quite a bit of feedback on the show I did yesterday, where I talked about my alternative plan for this $700 billion bailout, and just basically said, here's a better way that we could do it. And this is from a redneck in Texas that was born of a coal miner in Pennsylvania and not college educated, and if I can figure this out, so can they, so they're full of crap when they tell us this is the best they can do. The feedback was, do you really think that even with what you laid out, we should do this? That it's should we really just get rid of the Federal Reserve? Should we just not let these damn things fall and maybe the Federal Reserve will fall with it? And well, the answer is, of course I think that. Of course I think we should let it fall. Of course I think we should let this thing fall on its ass. Really, we should. No bailouts for anybody. All right, but it's going to suck if we do that, and a lot of people are going to lose their houses, and we're going to go into, I think a lot of people that are calling for that don't know what they're going to get. They don't know how bad it's going to be. They can't fathom how bad it's going to be if we allow this to occur. And my caution is make sure you're careful what you ask for, because you just might get it. If it happens, I'm going to be okay. I've got a plan. Many of you guys probably have a plan, too. and a plan B, and maybe if you're smart, a plan C and a plan D to boot. But a lot of these people out here don't, and they're the ones that really scare us when they freak out after all this stuff comes apart and we go into a 1930s depression at a time when people think owning an iPod and a cell phone are a right. You know, I mean, that's kind of where we're at today. So we're afraid of where this thing's going to go if it sinks. But, yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, we'd let it sink. We'd let it sink. We would tear it to the ground, and we would build it back the way that it's supposed to be. I just don't think that's going to happen right now. So my point was, here are some things that would make this thing a little bit more palatable and might starve off the eventual decay and destruction of our currency and our economy for another 20 years. The way they're going to do it now, who knows what it's going to do, but it's not good. That's enough on that, though. I want to go into this the subject of firearms. And as I do that, I need to give the disclaimer I always do when I talk about firearms. And that is simply that if you are not familiar with firearms, if you have not been trained to use a firearm, if you don't know basic safety procedures, if you haven't already been taught by a responsible family member when you were maybe growing up or by, you know, going out and buying some training, what have you, get yourself a mentor, go out and get some training, spend some time on the range using somebody else's guns under a controlled environment where you're instructed what to do, how to do it, and what's proper and what's improper. Learn how to clear all manner of weapons from break action single shot to semi-automatic rifle and everything in between. Learn all the rules of safety, get proper training. Do not disgrace our community by going out with an irresponsible attitude and purchasing a firearm and not knowing everything you need to know about it. If you do, you are likely to kill or injure yourself or someone else. And we'll add to yet the already 20,000 plus laws that exist in our nation. And all of us will hate you for doing that to us. So do not do it. All right, be responsible with firearms and do not make the government pass another law because of your ignorance and your incompetence. All right, become competent before you own a firearm. You would not go out never having been instructed how to drive and get in a car and drive it. That does not allow for this licensing nonsense for guns. You don't need a license to drive a car on a dirt road. It's not maintained by the county or the city. I don't know if most people realize that. A license does not allow you to drive a car. You can drive a car anytime you want to, at any age you want to, in any capacity that you want to, as long as you're not driving on streets that were funded by taxpayers. A license is not to drive. It's to drive on a public access road. All right? That's not some of this constitutional BS like the guy that got himself shot at in that Patriots book. It's just reality. You want to go drive off the... When I was a kid, we all rode motorcycles and dirt bikes. On the dirt roads, up the mountain. No one cared because there's no law that says you can't do it. All right? So, you know, even in that case, you didn't jump on a motorcycle with no understanding of how it works, with no instructions, and go tearing down the road. Don't do it with a gun. So that's my disclaimer. That's done. Let's move on, and let's just talk about some various types of firearms. Today's we're going to, I'm going to start out, I'm going to talk about a couple things that are still available in the surplus market. And what I mean by the surplus market, for those who may not know, is various militaries around the world will, you know, buy millions of guns, literally, millions of a model of gun they adopt. And eventually they'll decommission that gun because it's old and they've moved to a better gun. And a lot of the stuff that's been decommissioned from the 40s, 50s, 60s, and even earlier is stuff that's either bolt action or semi-automatic and legal for civilian purchase in the United States. These are not assault weapons, as nonsensical as that term is by itself. These are things like SKSs and bolt-action Mosin Nagants and older Mausers and things like that. They're often very affordable because the military simply dumps them in massive quantity at once and they kind of flood the market. And for a brief period of time, you can buy very high-quality weapons that were made to last and withstand the tortures of the elements for next to nothing. And that little window generally lasts a few years at most. To put this in perspective for you, there's an old rifle called the M1 Carbine. It's a 30 caliber little rifle. It's one of the best little plinking rifles ever made. It's a good self-defense weapon. It is not really a great hunting weapon. It's akin maybe to about the energy of a 357 Magnum, a little bit above that, but it's a 30 caliber round. Great little gun. If you're not familiar with them, go look up M1 Carbine. You'll find out all you need to know. Most people listening to this broadcast probably do or are familiar with the M1 Carbine. These today are, you know, upwards of $1,000 for one in good shape that's original and more. And civilian versions that are being made that are reproductions are selling for $600, $700, $800. When they first came on the surplus market years ago, you could pick one up for like $69 at a place I used to go, a department store called Lane Co. up in Pennsylvania where I went to high school. $79. And I know people that bought them for less. Or $69. They were $69.99. I should have bought 10 of them. I didn't buy any. I don't own one. I sure wish I did. So when I tell you about a couple things that are out there right now, understand the same type of thing can happen with their pricing, and I'm already seeing these two specific ones start to go up exponentially in price as this huge surplus that came in a few years ago begins to wane and dwindle. The first is the Mosin Nagant, or if you are not familiar with this weapon, you want to Google it to find it, spell it as though it was pronounced Mosin Nagant, okay? But the Mosin Nagant was the preferred rifle of the Russian infantry all through World War I, up into World War II. If you ever saw the movie Enemy at the Gates, the Russian sniper had a kind of a rigged-up Mosin Nagant. And that weapon was known to be a very accurate weapon. They were made by the multiple millions. There's literally tons of these things on the market right now. They fire a 7.62 by 54 R meaning rimmed round, and that's 30 caliber round for those that are not familiar with the metric system. 7.62 and 30 caliber are virtually identical. One nice thing about this gun, the ammunition is available very inexpensively right now. It's not as cheap as it was when all this stuff got dumped. Again, the stuff's starting to go up, but you can buy, you know, ammo cans of this stuff, 700 rounds sealed, and end up paying about 4 to 5 cents a round, I believe, still. And that stuff's, you know, sealed in cases, in packs, and could be put away under a bed or in a closet for years and years and years and not worried about it. And if you ever need it, it'll be there and it'll work. And when you pull the trigger, it'll go bang. One of the coolest little variants of this gun is known as the M44 carbine. It's a nice short rifle. It's about as short as some of the shorter, civilian bolt action guns. There's plenty of accessories to change the stocks out on these guns. There are ways to mount scopes on them that don't require any drilling. That simply you move the rear sight and mount a forward mounted scope, like a scout rifle configuration. Those are available and quite affordable. The beauty of these guns right now is if you look hard, you can still find them for about $50. The last gun show I went, they were ranging the M44 variants, which are more highly prized because they're short, compact, and lighter than the, you know, the ones that have like a 29-inch barrel that are like walking around with a pole. They were already kind of moving into like the 80 to 150, and I even saw some guys trying to sell them for like $160, $180. The guys that were trying to sell them for that much weren't selling any. But some of the guys that were selling them for $130, $140 were getting that for them, even though if you would have walked around a little bit more, you would have found them on another table for $75. That tells you that people are starting to value these things and being willing to pay that much money for them, so you're going to see that market go up. So if you'd like to have one of these things, now is probably the time to buy it. I think they're an outstanding weapon. They served the Russians for, God, almost, you know, the better part of a century. These things were still popping up in Vietnam, all right, in the war that we fought there in the hands of our enemies there. That's how long these things stayed in service, and they're a very deadly weapon, and they can be used as a defensive weapon. They are a great collector piece right now because they're so affordable, but they're not going to stay that way. And if you want to either use them as they are with the proper ammunition or convert them into a sporter, which some people have a heartache about, but if you wanted to do that, they are a great, low-cost way to have a good 30 caliber hunting rifle. Ballistically, they are so close to the 30-06 that in the field, you probably, you know, 200, 300 meters and back, you're not even going to notice the difference, and neither will a deer or an elk, etc., shot by them. So I can't recommend them highly enough. The next thing that's still out there and still quite affordable, but again, the prices on these is just going up left and right. These came on the market about 5 years ago, are the SKS variants out of Yugoslavia. These are a very well-made SKS. They are, I would say, close to on par with the Soviet-made ones, with the exception they don't have a chrome-lined barrel. But otherwise, these are a great gun. I purchased a couple of them. They function flawlessly. They do have that big old-looking grenade launcher thing on the end of them. Don't worry, you're not going to have anybody launching grenades at you with one because you got to have the grenades. California requires that thing to be removed because California is retarded, in my opinion. But the SKSs out of Yugoslavia are still available. I've seen them. Recent gun show I saw them for $149, the ones that were a little bit more beat. Ones that were in good shape were already crossing the $200 price point, and you could get these guns $500 when they first hit the market. So we're starting to see those go up in price as their numbers dwindle. They fire the 7.62x29 round, same round as the AK-47, so those are available very inexpensively. Again, not as inexpensively as they were when a bunch of those were dumped on the market with these SKSs, but they are a very affordable round. You can get them in very high volume. It's still buy quite a bit of mil-serp stuff on them, which may be a good idea if you want to have the guarantee that you'll be able to use these two particular Russian-originated designs in the future. The next surplus rifle that I think you really should take a look at, while there's still a few around and they're drying up really fast, are the various Lee Enfields that fire the 303 British. The short magazine Lee Enfield in particular, known as the SMLE, is just an exceptional gun. The Lee Enfield is one of the smoothest bolt-action rifles ever made. All the old surplus stuff has these 10-round box magazines where they put 10 rounds in them. And when the British first took these to battle in the Great War, people thought they had machine guns and semi-autos being fired at them because a well-trained British infantryman with an SMLE could fire at such a high rate of speed that when you had a few of them doing it, it sounded like you had a couple of machine gunners over there letting loose at you. So that is a hell of an endorsement. They're a very accurate weapon, and fortunately, there's still quite a bit of 303 surplus ammunition around that can be had quite affordably. So that's another, those are three big ones that are available right now in the surplus market that if you've been kicking around the idea of picking one up, now is the time. You're going to see their value go up, you know, exponentially. If the kind of the end of the world stuff happens, obviously any gun's going to go up in value. But even with everything being stable, these are just guns that have had proven collector value and right now are available at an extreme value, in my opinion. So take a look at them. I also want to briefly mention something that a lot of people aren't aware of is out there and available to you, called the Civilian Marksmanship Program. And the Civilian Marksmanship Program sells mostly U.S.-made military surplus stuff at a deeply discounted price from what you can get it on the open market. You're usually limited to being able to buy one of a particular model and make, and a lot of that stuff's starting to dry out too. They have certain requirements. I'll post a link to their site that lists the requirements to be able to buy, but if you have these requirements, you don't have to do the whole get an FFL guy in to do use his federal firearms license to do paperwork for you. You send in all your information and payment, and they mail you a gun in the mail. It used to be real easy to do. It requires some more things now. One is you have to be able to prove you are who you say you are and have proof of age. You have to be a legal U.S. citizen. You have to be involved in what's called a shooting club. So, and the NRA does not qualify. A lot of the state rifle associations do. So I'm part of the Texas State Rifle Association. That qualifies me if I want to purchase through CMP. You can look at the full details when you go there. If you are active duty military or reservist, you qualify. If you are retired military, you qualify. If you are prior service military, you do not qualify. You either have to be actively serving in the Guard, Reserves, or active duty military, or you have to have served long enough to earn a retirement from the military to qualify without being part of one of these clubs. So either you have to be part of a recognized shooting club that promotes civilian marksmanship, or be active duty or retired military. Those are the two big ones. Most people would qualify for the others. The two things that are actually available right now, I looked at M1 carbines today. They're sold out on everything. There's a few on auction. So unfortunately, I've missed my window to get one of those. They may get some more in the future. Who knows? But those are probably gone for eternity. But the M1 Garands are still available, and I've looked at Garands. This is a .30-06 semi-auto. rifle, the rifle that General Patton called the greatest battle implement ever devised, which is a hell of a ringing endorsement, served us well in World War II, fires a .30-06 round. They are available for under $500 right now. If you go to a store, if you go to a gun show, you'll see them up in the $1,000 range. Again, through CMP, you have to meet these qualifications, and you can only buy one. I think I'm going to get off the pot and buy one of these things before they're gone. There are also different grades. That's called a rack-grade weapon that's available for about $400 and some. And that means they're pretty beat, but I like to put some TLC on surplus arms. So I think that's going to be something I'm going to pick up, and I recommend you look at that. If you have any interest in ever owning an M1 Garand, you might want to get the qualifications that you need to buy through CMP, because you can buy one for about half the price of the open market right now, and that window will close soon. The other thing that's available there are the 1917 Enfields. During World War I, we didn't have enough of the Ought-3 Springfield bolt-action 30-06s to go around, and we were already making tons of Enfields and 303 British for the English. And what our government said to these factories that already had tons of stuff built and ready to go to make these Enfields is, can you chamber them in 30-06? And, of course, Remington and Eddystone and Winchester, et cetera, all said, you got a purchase order? And their government said, sure, we're the government. We have lots of money. So they started cranking them out in 30-06. So this is basically the British gun made for Americans with some different modifications. I own one of these that was sporterized. It is the most accurate rifle I own. It is a tack driver. It is sub-minute of angle at 100 yards, inside an inch all day long, every round touching as long as I do my part. Those are available for about $400 and down, depending on grade and collector value, and a few for above that if they're, like, you know, pristine, perfect weapons with matching serial numbers. They also have some barreled actions. And my sporterized gun, just based on the things I can see with it, looks to me like somebody bought a barreled action back in the 30s when these things first came on the market. And you could buy barreled actions back then for about $15. Built a handmade custom stock and made this beautiful sporting gun out of this military barreled action. And a barreled action is basically your bolt, the action, and the barrel. And then you have got to come up with a stock and figure out what you want to do with it to sporterize it. So if you have a desire to sporterize a military surplus gun, you might want to go with those barreled actions. They're selling for about $200. So those are available and something I definitely recommend you look at. And folks, as I go through this, I'm going to talk now about some civilian guns. And I know that I'm going to have people comment and go, well, this is a great option. This is a great option. Please do. I want you to. Come by the survivalpodcast.com and talk about the other options that are available out there for, you know, $300 and down. They're affordable working man's guns that are reliable, proven, and dependable for self-defense, for, you know, sporting targeting, and for hunting. Proven game getters, because feeding yourself is an American tradition for the rifleman. And I'm going to talk a little bit about some ways to do that now, both to put meat on the table and both to keep bad guys out of the house if you have to. In the civilian world, I have a hard time recommending a bolt-action rifle, center fire, you know, in calibers like .308, .30-06, .270, .243, good proven deer calibers, up to stuff that you'd go out and hunt elk and deer with, or elk and bear with, that rivals the Savage 110 and the various Savage rifles. They are extremely affordable. The newest models, if you go buy a new one with their AccuTrigger, has just changed the entire way that the triggers are even built and made adjustable. They've always been extremely accurate. They have this barrel nut right by the action that makes them look kind of ugly to some people. I actually like it. I like it because you know it's a Savage when you look at it, nothing else looks like it. And I like to be different. I own a Savage 110 in .308. It's an old gun, very old, I'd say 30 years old. I got it used in a trade with a guy who I traded a Remington M Model 70 in 7mm Remington Magnum, because I didn't like shooting it. So he got the better end of that deal price-wise, but I think I got the better rifle. And I've had that rifle out on a lot of deer hunts, and it's always done its job. It's extremely accurate. It's you know, down in the little bit over an inch at 100-yard range. I've never really done anything to it. Never even floated the barrel or anything. It just came in. I mounted a scope on it, sighted it in with some 180-grain rounds, and it's just that's what it's been forever, and that's always taking good care of me. And it's always put down everything that I've ever shot with it, and I can't recommend them enough. And if you go out and look at some various boards, you'll find that Savages have a cult following that rivals anybody else's cult following. And that's because they're just a proven, accurate, well-made, American-made gun. And if you're looking for an entry-level bolt gun, it's hard to beat them. And if you go to gun shows and shops and look for some used ones, you can get some great deals on them. I've seen them down in the $200 and even a little bit under range for some that may be a little scratched up, but you take some time and refinish the stock or what have you, and you can have a virtually new bolt-action centerfire rifle for $200, plus the cost of a scope and some rings. And there's even some sporting packages out there come with a scope on them. I actually saw 243 Savage, brand new, with AccuTrigger, with it was kind of a cheap scope, but a scope and rings on it at the gun show, and I think it was $279. It's a heck of a deal, folks, so it's something that I highly recommend. Next on the list is High Point. High Point has a bad rap. People call their pistols ghetto Glocks. I'll say this about a High Point pistol. It's ugly and it's heavy, and they probably are just as dangerous if you hit somebody in the head with one as if you shot them. But I bought a little C9 for $149 brand new, a lifetime warranty. I could throw it out in the street, drive a truck over it, send it back to High Point, and they would either repair or replace it, even if I told them I did it. That's a company that stands behind its work and always makes things right. I've had quite a few people tell me they've sent weapons in to be serviced and have them sent back with extra magazines for free for, quote, their trouble. It doesn't always happen, but it happens sometimes, and that's a hell of a testament to a manufacturer being willing to stand behind their product. The little C9 that I bought, I took it down to the range, and I just, you know, was merciless to it. I threw about 250 rounds through it as fast as I could. I had it hot, smoking, greasy, and gummy, and it functioned flawlessly. I don't know what else you want in a gun. I had no problem keeping rounds at about 15 yards inside of a paper plate from various positions. How far are you going to, you know, defend yourself with a weapon like that? 15 yards is really the upper end of what I would have that gun for in the first place. At $150, man, they're just, it's hard to beat them, and they're available in a variety of calibers. 380, which is kind of a shortened version of the 9mm, about the lowest I would go for a protection round anyway. The 9mm, the 40 Smith & Wesson, and 45 APC. And all of those pistols are available for $149. And that's if you're paying full price retail. So again, it's just a weapon that's hard to justify not seeing the value in it. Are there better pistols? Absolutely. If I have a choice between carrying my C9 or my PT-1911, what am I going to carry? Well, PT-1911, duh. It's a much better gun, but it cost me $600. And I could have bought 4 High Points. I could have bought one in 380, one in 9mm, one in 40, and one in 45 for the same price as my Taurus PT-1911. So that says a lot about their value. Their carbines, both the 4095 and the 995, one shoots 9mm, one shoots 40 Smith & Wesson. Wonderful little carbines. I've got a 995, and fun as hell to shoot. Accurate with out to about 100 yards, which is kind of stretching the range for those rounds anyway. Could be used in a survival situation for hunting, self-defense. They're not that loud. They take a 10-round magazine, semi-auto fire, something definitely worth looking into. And High Point has a great forum. I'll post a link to it from the notes on this broadcast. And something I also really recommend you take a look at. Even if you think the pistols are just ugly, and you think that they're too heavy and too bulky and you would never own one, I bet you if you buy yourself a High Point Carbine and, you know, buy some cheap 9mm or some cheap 40 Smith & Wesson rounds and go down the range and do some plinking, you're never going to regret buying it. You'll probably have it for the rest of your life. They're an absolute blast. And they are a very dependable weapon from the standpoint of functioning. They function quite well. So that's kind of my endorsement for High Point. Another great option for a sidearm is the Bursa Thunder 380. They retail for like $249. It's a very compact, double-action, semi-auto pistol. And people kind of give them a bad rap on the internet, like they do anything that doesn't require you to mortgage your freaking house or skip a truck payment to buy. This is my endorsement for the Bursa 380. I know several law enforcement officers that when they carry a backup gun or they carry off-duty and they want a small frame gun to carry off-duty, that's what they choose to carry. Most of them can get some kind of supplement from their departments for an off-duty or backup piece so they don't have to pay full price. That means they can generally afford to buy, you know, a better gun, quote-unquote, if they wanted to. They carry it because it's just a great carry weapon. It's small, compact, does exactly what it's supposed to do. It's been proven reliable and dependable. It's a 380, so you're not walking around with a 32 or a 25 or something like that. So it's got a reasonable amount of stopping power, especially at close quarters ranges. It does what it needs to do. It's got a magazine that's a little bit extended to if you want to go out and shoot with it on occasion just for target practice or what have you, that makes it a little more comfortable for larger handed shooters. And I like it enough that my wife's going to be soon taking a concealed carry class, and I need to decide what to get for her. And I think that's what I'm going to get her. And at the price that they are, I don't have anything that small frame that I can carry, and I think I'm going to buy myself one. There's just times of the year where it's pretty hot here that maybe carrying a 1911 is a bit bulky. So I really think they're a great gun. And again, at $249, that's the retail price at Academy Sports and Outdoors. So I'm sure if you worked a little bit, you could find a better deal on them. But they're definitely a good option. Another great option is, you know, never underestimate the stopping power of the 38 Special. It's a proven defensive handgun, and I often see kind of older, maybe a little bit beat-up looking snub-nosed 38s available at gun shows for under $100. All right. Now, these are not target grade guns. They're not hammerless, so they, you know, they're not really something maybe that if you were carrying it concealed and needed to defend yourself, you would be comfortable firing through a jacket pocket or what have you. There are better options, but they cost quite a bit more. Rossi makes some affordable 38s and 357s. You step into like the Smith & Wesson titanium frames. Excellent, excellent guns. $500-$600 though. Right, where these little 38 specials are available, $100, $150. First rule of a gunfight, folks, bring a gun. So if that's your only option, that's something that's out there and available. I don't know. I've not really seen a lot of them in shops, but I've never really looked for them, but I've always found them available at gun shows. For rifles, getting back to rifles for a second, brand new, $199, New England Firearms single-shot break-action handy rifle. Available in like calibers from there's some 22 long rifle stuff available, 22 Magnum, 17 Hornady, but those are the Sportsters, are built a little bit differently. But once you step into center fire, from 22 Hornet up to the 50 Smith & Wesson, all right, 45-70, 30-06, 270, 7mm 08. They even did some runs of 35 Whalen for a while. 243, on and on. I mean, any configuration you can think of just about in common centerfire rifles, 220 Ruger, 223, just a tremendous variety. What they don't have are any of the big Magnums. They do have the 450 Marlin, so if you do not hand load and you wanted to shoot full power versions of the 4570, you could go with a 450 Marlin. So they're a great gun. Again, $200, and the beauty of them is they can be sent into the factory and fitted with other barrels. So you could go buy a 30-06, you could send it in, get a shotgun barrel for it, you could get, let's say, a 45-70 barrel for it, and a 22 Hornet barrel for it. Have a pretty complete arsenal right there, and you would be out, let's see, $200 for the frame, 100 for each of the rifle barrels, call it. So that's $465 for the shotgun barrel. $465, you've got a 22 Hornet, 30-06, 45-70, and a shotgun. That's a tough deal to beat right there. So I really like those. They kind of have a cult following of their own. They have a great list on Yahoo that's been around for a while. I've been a member for, like 6-7 years on that list. So I'll post a link to that as well in this podcast. But they're a great gun. They are limited as a single shot, but they're something that's really rewarding to shoot as well. And again, affordability, reliability, and safety. That's really what you're getting out of the NEF guns. They're now owned by Marlin, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention the various Marlin lever actions. Even brand new Marlin lever actions are still quite affordable. They're not as low priced as some of these other guns, but they are still affordable. And if you go out and find some of the used ones that are a little bit beat up, odds are you can buy one that's 20 years old and still have a lifetime of use left in it. They're a very well-made gun, and Marlin will take care of you if you need service on your weapon. They will charge you a little bit for it. They don't do it for free, unless it's under the initial warranty. But what they charge you is ridiculously inexpensive. I sent my bolt action 22 from them in a few years ago. It needed quite a bit of work. It wasn't ejecting shells. They sent it back to me, basically completely rebuilt everything in the breech, and they charged me $10. So, no gunsmith would have done the work for me for $10. So that says a lot about them and their reliability. And if you go looking in the gun shops, you can find quite a few of the lever guns in both the pistol calibers and rifle calibers. My favorites that are available from these guys are 45-70. You're going to pay usually a little more for those. People value them quite a bit once they get their hands on one. The 30-30 is a proven, been around forever, year-round, and there's a reason. 35 Remington, a little harder to find. They're the last people that still make a weapon in 35 Remington. That is a great, proven Woods caliber for deer and black bear. It's most popular in the Northeast where I went to high school. It's just why I guess I'm familiar with it. But if I ever find one used at a reasonable price, I would buy it on the spot. And then the pistol calibers, they make them in 357 Magnum, which also shoots 38s, and 44 Magnum, which shoots 44 Specials. Those are exceptional values. I found a 357 in a little shop, kind of a hardware/gun shop one day in Pennsylvania when I was looking for a first deer rifle for my son. It was like $189. The guy basically talked me out of it for my son as a first deer rifle because it was only a 357. I should have bought it anyway. I kick myself every time I think about that little gun. That was a heck of a deal. Those are still out there, so be on the lookout for them. Moving into shotguns, I have a couple preferences for kind of entry-level shotguns. One is the most popular pump gun of all time, the Remington 870. These can still be had under $300, down in the lower $200 range. Sometimes when you find a good deal, if you buy what they call the Remington 870 Expresses, which are kind of the matte finish, there's nothing for me to say about the 870. As long as it's been around, people have carried it. It's been used for everything from self-defense to by our military to, bring in meat in from the field. It's absolutely proven, and I actually don't know anybody with a lot of negative things to say about the Remington 870. And my first shotgun, other than the little single-shot 20-gauge that I learned to shoot with, was an 870 Wingmaster. And I sold that gun at a time in my life where I was pretty broke, and I really wish I didn't. Outstanding shotgun, still quite affordable, as long as you go with the ones that are kind of the, not the Wingmasters that are really nice and fancy looking, but the lower end ones. And there's plenty of them out there on the used market as well that can be had under $200 if you look hard enough. Plenty of accessories available, additional barrels. Anything you could possibly want is available for the 870. I've seen them in configurations where they look like trench guns and tactical, and they look like sporting guns. On that note, even if you're buying a shotgun for defense around the home, great gun, great choice. Go with a sporting one. Why do you think you need these tactical ones with these heat guards and all this stuff, extended magazines and everything like that? You're not a soldier, all right, folks? These people that live in these fantasy worlds, main battle rifles and stuff like that, I'm sorry. The odds of you ever needing to deploy those things that way, if you need to, you'll say you're right and I'm wrong. But odds are I'm going to be right on this. And just the psychology here, if somebody ever does break into your house, which is the most legitimate use you'll probably ever have for a firearm, and you have to shoot them, God forbid, and you shoot them with this, you know, beat up old 870 with some six shot in it for rabbits, then you look like a homeowner who was lucky enough to have a gun around when some overzealous district attorney tries to prosecute you in front of a jury, and you can stand in front of the jury and go, I'm just glad I had a way to defend myself and my family. You have a tactical, heat-shielded, you know, pistol grip, shotgun, short barrel, long magazine, DA that's just got a hard on to put guys with guns behind jail, whether he should or not. He's going to have a field day with you in court. So really think about that. Another pump gun is the Mossberg pumps. They're a great gun as well. I just helped a friend pick one of those out. It was a little bit tactical looking, but not to the extreme. And they're very reliable, very dependable, and generally cost less than the Remingtons. I guess I'm just biased. I would take the Remington first. I'd pay a little bit more, but I couldn't fault you for buying a Mossberg. And then the various single-shot shotguns. You can go out there and buy a single-shot shotgun and just about any gauge under the sun. For under $100, New England Firearms makes one. Generally sells in like the $80 range. And again, those can be sent in under the barrel accessory program. You can't buy rifle barrels for them, but you can buy other shotgun barrels for them. So that kind of wraps it up, and that was kind of just rattling off this stuff. And I don't know that I did the best podcast I've ever done today, but I think I needed to get out of the anger for a while. And do some things that were more, you know, practical things that people would either buy and keep. So tomorrow I'm going to try to do something more going back into foods. So I'm thinking about doing something on just different ways that you can use foods that store well to cook things that maybe we don't think about. That will allow you to use the stuff that you store on a more regular basis, right? And that'll make it easier for you to justify buying extra food and storing extra food. I'm going to try to do that tomorrow. This shifted me out of my gear because I'm really mad. And I'm really pissed about what our government's doing to us right now. And I want to close with a thought on this. I called both of my senators and my congressman yesterday and said, you better oppose this thing. And I was actually, I didn't get through one of my senators. Hopefully, that's Kate Hutchison. I hope she's really hearing it hard from other people. But John Cornyn and Joe Barton, both have gone on record and said we will not vote for this thing. Congressman Martin said, comes to the floor the way it is, I ain't doing it. Right? And John Cornyn, my other senator, he told me, he didn't talk to me obviously, but his staff told me that if it actually makes it out of the House, gets in front of the Senate for any kind of review, there's no way he'd vote for it. So there are some of our elected officials standing up to this thing. I'm not 100% happy with any of those three people, but generally they seem like they try to do the right thing, and I guess we're lucky down here in Texas. But call your congressman on this thing. And just because I gave you an alternative yesterday doesn't mean that's not my ideal. I think they need to kill this bill. They need to kill it, and if they're going to do any kind of rescuing, they got to completely start over from zero with this and come up with a new way to do it. The thing that they're doing today is going to kill us. It's going to kill the value of our currency. It's going to set a precedent for bailing everybody out. Like I said at the beginning today, they just went and bailed out Chrysler, GM, and Ford. I don't even know that they needed to be bailed out. And, I mean, Chrysler's got a buyer already that's considering buying enough to end up owning 100% of them from Daimler. Chrysler doesn't need to be bailed out. Chrysler's, you know, really going into the electric world. I think they're going to be just fine in the future. I guess the only thing I can say for Chrysler is they did get bailed out before and they actually paid the money back. And I think they may be the only business in the history of the world that's ever taken a bailout and paid it back. So, you know, I guess if anybody's the same, it's them. But, you know, we don't need to be doing this. We don't need to be. Remember, folks, this is not just money that's laying around somewhere. They're printing this money when the M3 number was $13 trillion. They just printed another $1 trillion this year, or 1/13. That means the value of your dollar this year just dropped by 13 cents. Okay? That's the only way I can put it. 13% of the value of your dollar is gone. All right, you talk about losing 13% of the stock market? You lost 13% on your solid cash money in your hand because of this nonsense. So, you know, call those folks and let them know you're not happy with it. And I hope you tune in tomorrow for a show that's more on food and maybe food usage rather than food storage. I'm going to see what I can put together with that. And again, this has been Jack Spirko with the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't.
You can scream and you can holler, it really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.